We don't have time this morning to show a video that I was going to show you to get going today. So let me tell you what was in the video. I watched all these videos on YouTube this week of either a husband or a wife caring for their spouse during long-term diagnoses or some accident that happens, and now that spouse is incapacitated, and how that husband or that wife cared for their spouse long after it was easy. And to be honest, some of those, man, they reach in and they just like grab your heart, and you can't help but to shed tears at the amazing side of love that at times we get to see even in the human relationships. So I really love that. And I love how in each of those videos, how the spouse decided to set aside his or her wants and needs and desires to serve the wants and the needs and the desires of the spouse. And I find that to be an incredible moment for us to think about what marriage really is. So as a starting point today, and remember, I told you last week that we're going to take a very direct route, and I'm going to be very direct today. But as a starting point for us today, I'd like to ask you this question. Can we turn the wing lights on, Keith? Thanks. If you're sitting by yourself and you were thinking, what is the biggest problem or issue in your marriage, what would you say? What is the biggest problem that you guys face, the biggest issue that you face? What is your biggest problem? I want you to think about that for a second. Now, I want to answer the question because I know what it is. You are the biggest problem in your marriage. You're it. So husbands and wives, I want you to repeat after me. I am the biggest problem in my marriage. Now, some of you are smirking for a very good reason. Because to be totally honest, it's very easy for us to go, yeah, you're right, she is the biggest problem in my marriage, or he is the biggest problem. What we don't do is say, I own it. I'm the problem. And so it's very easy to say all the reasons why she's the problem or he's the problem, but it's really hard for us at times to go, it's really me. And if you can believe that it is really true that you're the biggest problem, I believe that there's no obstacle, there's no problem, there's no issue in your marriage that you cannot overcome if you really believe this is true. It's for this reason that maybe you guys have been to marriage seminars before where they say, okay, here's the key to marriage. It's all about 50-50. I want you to know that I think 50-50 is unbiblical. Because 50-50 says, I'll meet you halfway. 50-50 says, I'll give up some of what I want in order to get some of what I want. 50-50. It is not biblical. A couple years ago, there's a book that came out and said, no, it's not 50-50. It's 100%, 100%. So you give up all that you have in the hopes that you get all that you have. And I want you to know that I think that is unbiblical as well. But I do want to tell you what I think the Bible says is the formula for not only a godly marriage, but just a good marriage. So a lot of what I'm going to say today, yeah, it's for people who love Jesus, but it's also for people outside of Christianity who are having problems in their marriage. It's the same issue. God gets us right into there. So we're going to go to Ephesians chapter 5, and as you go there on your way, I want to read as a baseline for us as a starting point today from Matthew 16, which you guys know very well. It says, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. But whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. So in Ephesians 5, one of the classic passages on marriage, husbands and wives, and how it works. Ephesians 5, verse 22, it says, wives, submit to your husbands as to the Lord, for the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, his body, and is himself its Savior. Now, as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit in everything to their husbands. So we have this first part, which is wives submitting to husbands. And the reason is because the church submits to Christ. So we already have this reflection of how wives in the marriage submit to their husbands. It should mirror how the church submits to Christ. That's what he's saying. Let's keep reading. Verse 25. It says, "Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, so that he might present the church to himself in splendor, without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that she might be holy and without blemish. In the same way, husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ does the church, because we are members of his body. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This mystery is profound, and I am saying that it refers to Christ and the church. However, let each of you love his wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband." So in the first part of these first three verses, it's wife submit to her husband because it mirrors how the church submits to Christ. Then verse 25 to the end, we have husbands love your wives, and the way that you're supposed to love your wife is as Christ loved the church, which, by the way, in case you didn't know it, he died for the church. Love your wife that way. So if I take all of these verses together and I try to combine them and summarize them into one phrase for what God wants out of marriages, the phrase is die to self. Die to self. That is what we are called to do. Die to self. Not popular. Die to self. Not easy. Die to self. Humbling. But it is the call. Which means that the formula is not 50-50, I meet you halfway. It's not 100-100, I get all my stuff and you get all your stuff. The actual formula from a biblical point of view is 100-0. I give up all of who I am, and I have no expectation of getting anything back. It's not a circular pattern where I will do my stuff as long as you do your stuff. I give up my stuff. I die to myself, even if I get nothing back in reward. That's the biblical model. It is die to self. So I've sat with young couples for years as they're getting ready to be married. And inevitably, the same thing happens. Either the first or the second time we meet, I give them an assignment. They have to go home and they each have to write 10 reasons why they want to marry this person. And then we go through it. And so I'll sit in the meeting with them and I'll say, okay, why do you want to marry this woman? And the guy, you know, he just can't wait. It's like his shining moment because he actually thought about these things. He says, oh, she's so beautiful. And oh, we talk about everything. And oh, she just makes me feel whole when I'm with her. And I say, wow, that's really great. So essentially, what you're saying is that all the reasons you have for marrying this woman are selfish. They're all about you. You like that she is beautiful. You like how she makes you feel. You like how you talk and share. So really, your marriage is about you. And so then the guy begins to argue with me back and forth, and I say, okay, well, wait a minute. What happens when her beauty fades? Will you still love her? What happens when life gets crazy busy and you have no time to talk? Will you still love her? What happens when you're not filled with the same kind of feelings of gush? Will you still love her? And then inevitably that poor guy sits there with a blank look on his face and has no idea what to say. But I think the reality is that if we, a lot of us, would go back to the year we got married. I was 22 years old. I look at 22-year-old kids now, I'm like, they don't got any clue at all. I, of course, was way more mature way back then, right? But when I, you know, when I think about the reasons I got married in the first place, a lot of them had to do with me. They really did. And maybe you can think, oh, you know, guys, they're, you know, they only think of one thing in the first year. I'm going to have sex. And maybe the woman gets married for the companionship and the intimacy. But if you go back and you think about those first years, it's really, we tried to make it about us. And we thought marriage was going to fulfill us. We thought we're going to have these expectations and she or he was going to complete completely in every way and we're going to live in bliss. Then we find out that it doesn't quite work that way. You see, I think marriage has a lot of really great byproducts, but in and of itself, it's designed to be a place where you and I learn the art of dying to ourselves in order to serve somebody else. And it's like an ongoing conference, it's an ongoing lesson, and we have to renew it all the time, but we constantly have to keep learning to die to self. Man, I'd love to tell you that it's like one of those things, like graduation from high school. You graduate, you're done, and you're on. But dying to self doesn't work that way. You don't get to do it like on Sunday, and then you're good for the week, you know, like taking a shower. when you're in junior high, maybe. It doesn't work that way, because it's every day, multiple times throughout the day, you come to a crossroads, and you have a choice. What am I going to do in this moment? Am I going to live this moment for me? Am I going to talk this moment for me? Am I going to do it for me? Or am I going to die to self? And quite honestly, I don't want to die to me. I want to live for me. And that's the problem I have with my problem. I like me. I like being served. I like me. When my daughter Abby was about 5 years old, I was driving down the road and I saw her looking in the rearview mirror, like looking at herself, yes, back and forth. And then she announces, "I like me," just like that. And it's kind of become a family joke, but if you think about that a little bit broader, isn't that all of us? I like me. I like to be served. I like it when she dies to self. I just don't like it as much when I have to do it. You with me on that? And don't I sometimes live with the expectation that she will do it, not realizing that she has the expectation that I'm going to do it? I like it when it's one way. I don't like it when it has to be two ways. So I would argue that you could take just about any fight, any conflict, any annoyance, anything that happens in marriage, and it can be boiled down to one or the other or both, not being willing to die to self. And I don't care what the situation is, somewhere in that situation is this reality. I don't want to, she doesn't want to, maybe we neither one of us want to. And so the conflict builds, the yelling and screaming builds, the fight continues on, nobody wants to say I'm sorry, nobody wants to take that first step because I'm right, she's wrong. She should be the one, he should be the one. And I'm unwilling myself to die, to crucify myself, to make that step forward. In fact, I would argue that generally what we all do is the same thing that we see in the Garden of Eden with Adam and Eve. Here's what we do. It's her fault. Think about the story. God comes after Adam and Eve's sin. He says, Adam, how come you're hiding? And Adam says, well, it wasn't my fault. It was the woman's fault. Men have been doing this ever since, right? So God says to Eve, well, it wasn't my fault. It was the serpent's fault. Nobody wanted to say it was my fault. And so here we are all these years later, and we're still looking around going, it's her fault. It's my work's fault. It's my boss's fault. It's my parents' fault. But not very many people say it is my fault. So husbands and wives, repeat this after me again. I am the biggest problem in my marriage. So repeat this now. Repeat this with me. My spouse is not the biggest problem in my marriage. What's so funny is that some of you laughed in the second part and not the first part. I just think it's really funny. And again, I want to say, if you can be convinced that this is true, if you can own the problem and say, it's me, and not say, it's me more than you, it's me and me alone, there's nothing that you guys cannot get over. Now, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say, you know what, Scott? If you knew the way he treated me at home, you wouldn't say that. Or you'd say, if you knew how she talked to me at home, you wouldn't say that. Or if you knew this thing that happened in the past, you wouldn't say that. Well, to that I would respond, It sounds like you're saying that you deserve better. That you deserve better. That your expectation is that you deserve better than you're getting. And again, I want to come back to our passage in Ephesians 5, where Paul writes that marriage is this reflection of Christ's love for the church. In fact, several times in the New Testament, we are called, as Christians, we are called the bride of Christ. So let me remind you what the Bible has to say about the bride of Christ. If you go back to the Old Testament, here's how God describes the chosen people of Israel. He says, they have prostituted themselves to other gods. You wonder what God thinks of his people? Read the book of Hosea. God says to a prophet, go marry a whore, because that's how I see Israel. You wonder how God sees his people? And then you look in the New Testament and you ask yourself, is this Jesus dying for me, for us? Did we deserve this? Were we not soiled and unfaithful and undeserving? And he died for us anyway. You see, that's how God sees us. And in the marriage relationship that is supposed to reflect the love that Christ has for his church, we get it all wrong if we think that his love is deserved by us. We don't deserve it. And the kicker is, he loves us anyway. What would it be like if he only loved us when we deserved it? Or if we only loved it in the conditions, the perfect conditions, then he would love us. We wouldn't want that from God, so why would we expect that in our marriage? So that's the model. And I think if we're honest, we all fall terribly short of that kind of love. So how do we improve in this area? Again, just as a warning, I want to take a direct path. How do we do this? I'm going to start with wives. Wives, here's how you can work on dying to self. First thing you can do is learn when to keep your mouth shut. Yeah, you heard me. Learn when to keep your mouth shut. Here's what I mean by that. I've had wives say to me, my husband makes me feel ugly. He talks about how much weight I've gained. He talked about how much I've changed since we got married. He talks about how we used to go and do all these things together. He sometimes seems to recoil at my touch. And I've heard these, and it's terrible. I hate that those things happen. But wives, I want you to listen to me. I've had husbands say to me, my wife makes me feel small. And what he means by that is, as soon as I walk in the door, she's critical. I can't do enough to please her. I can never do and be good enough for her in her own eyes. All I ever hear from her is drive and stick and poke and nothing else. That's all I ever get from her. I feel like I'm back in the corner constantly from the moment I walk in the door because all she does is berate me to death. And I feel very small. You see, wives, for the most part, you guys are better at words than the guys. You're better at expression than the guys. You're also better at remembering all of his failures for the last 40 years than he does. And for whatever reason, you can bring those things up quick. And you can jab them and you can smack them and you can pistol whip them with all those things that he did wrong. God has designed you to be really good with your words. But sometimes when you're really good with your words, you make your husband feel very small. Now, the reason that I am the right person to say this to you is because in my marriage, I'm this person. I'm the one with the quick tongue. I'm the one with the critical edge. I'm the one that can walk in the door, and from the moment I walk in the door, it's you didn't do this, you didn't do this, you didn't do this. This has been my 25 years this year. This has been my struggle. And I know what it's like to need to be right. I know what it's like to have the last word. I know what it's like to sit there and you just can't wait because you got the big last uppercut that's going to win the argument. I know what it's like. And I think many of you ladies do as well. In the book of James, we read that from a Christian point of view, that we Christians work at being slow to speak, quick to listen. What if just in our marriages we could do this? Slow to speak, quick to listen. What would that look like? You see, James says that the real problem that we have back and forth in our relationships, kind of what Rod was talking about in communion, The real problem that we have in our relationships is right here. That's in the tongue. We just can't control it. And for some of you ladies, can I just say, with all the love in my heart, that this is an area that you need to work on. You need to know when to say something and what to say, not just let it come flooding out Niagara Falls whenever you think something. It's not helpful. But listen, guys, if our wives need to work at learning to keep their mouths closed at times, some of you need to work on opening your mouths. Here's what I mean. I mean that sometimes over the years, we become very withdrawn. We stop talking. You know, the truth is that for some of our wives, they haven't heard us talk to them in years about anything of substance. So can I just say to you guys directly, some of you guys need to stop being pansy men. Cowards cowering in the corner. Are you a man or not? I want to tell you, hike up your skirt. Can I just say it that way? Hike up your skirt and be a man. Be a man of character. Be the man that she needs you to be. Rise above your hurt little feelings that said, oh, she didn't want to have sex last night, so I'm going to walk around like Eeyore. Remember Eeyore by Winnie the Pooh? Oh, nobody loved me. Next time he acts like Eeyore, call him Eeyore, wait, ladies, all right? Let's stop that. That is unbecoming to a man. Be a man. And for some of you, it's been a long time. You don't even remember what it looks like. It's time to stop being the pansy man. You are the leader of the home from the biblical point of view. It's time for some of you to do it. You see, dying to self, one of the things that happens in dying to self is it takes it away from me and her. And when we do it God's way, what we're really doing is we're anchoring our relationship not to the imperfections of our spouse, but really to the perfections of God Himself. And we anchor ourselves to the shoreline where God, the perfect Father, God, the perfect husband, who has a love that never ends, never runs away, He never abandons us, He never gives us what we deserve, He loves us perfectly, always. We anchor ourselves there. And if we anchor ourselves anywhere else, we're just up and down in the sea. We're bobbing around. We got no control because, oh, my spouse is mad at me today. Or, oh, what does he think today? Or she, or back and forth. And we're just bobbing around because we're anchoring in the wrong spot. Listen, teenage girls, this is how some of you are already living. Can I just say, some of you already have this pattern in your life that if you don't have a boyfriend or a boy in your life, you're not happy. I want you to know that that boy is always going to disappoint you. And then what are you going to do? You got to go on to the next boy who's going to disappoint you? Because it's been like a whole like 10 days. It's our 10-year anniversary, whatever that means. It's the next boy. This is your pattern that you are setting up. You are anchoring yourself to the wrong thing. And what could happen in your life is that you grow up from a little girl to a big girl trying to do the same thing. And you think your self-identity and your self-worth is going to come from your husband who will disappoint you. And then what are you going to do? And if you can learn at a young age to anchor yourself to the real thing, anchor yourself to God who never changes, and not to the man or the woman or the boy or the girl and all the emotions and the ups and downs, you're going to be so much better ahead and farther ahead in life. And really for all of us, the big axiom in marriage and all relationships is that we can only control us. And what immediately happens when I talk about something like this, our minds immediately spin off to all the ways our spouse can do this better. Why can't we spin it into the mirror and say, how can I do it better? I can't, honestly, I can't control the way she is. I can't control her responses. Makes my wife so mad when she says, oh, you, okay, she wouldn't say it necessarily this way, but you hurt my feelings. Well, there's a part of me that says, I can't hurt your feelings. That's never helpful to say in the argument in the moment. But I can only control me. I can't control her emotions. I can't control her feelings. I can't control what she does. I can control me. And I can decide that regardless of whether she reciprocates, I can die to self. And let me tell you guys, can I just say, don't wait around for your wife to show you what it looks like. You be the man. You take the first step with courage and you die to yourself first and then see what happens in that relationship. So what we end up doing sometimes is playing the little conditions game. Well, if she will, then I will. If he cleans up his act, then I'll die to self. If she stops treating me like a 2-year-old, then I'll respond. No conditions in a die to self. It's 100-0. I give up all that I am and all my expectations and all my wants in order to serve her completely. I am convinced that when two people love Jesus, there is nothing that they can't get past in their life. And can I just say it this way? It's a little edgy. I don't care. You want to be the lover that your spouse has always wanted to have? Practice safe dying to self. You like that? It's always safe. Always the right thing to do. You don't have to wonder, oh, what should I do in this moment? Should I be the one? Should she be the one? Should I wait for her? Should I wait for him? It's always the safe thing to do. Do you be the one to die to self first? Always. So here's how we're going to end in the minutes that we have. Let's put up that slide, Kens. Okay, here's what we're going to do. I want you all to think about in your marriage, I want you to think about ways that you yourself this week could do a better job of dying to self. So, why don't you take out your cell phones? Okay? All right. I have a his and a hers. I have my cell phone and my wife's cell phone. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to think about ways that you, not your spouse, you know, don't send me a list of things that your spouse could do a lot better, but what are some ways that you yourself this week could die to self better in your relationship? And I want you to send, guys, send me the text, the first number there. Girls, I want you to send it to this phone. Now, in the first service, I got over 100 texts between my two phones. So they were all in. And as they start coming in, I'm going to start reading them to you guys. They're all anonymous, but I'm going to read the ideas that our spouses have for ways that they can do better. Y'all with me on that? All right, so we're going to turn on some text and music. That's not text and music, that's text and music. And I want you to think, start sending me these, and I'll read them, okay? All right, as they start coming in here, I'm just going to start reading some of them. From the guys, forgive first. I could be more patient when it comes to my wife's daily tasks. Pray with my wife. I will not be frustrated when I have to pause the television when she wants to talk to me. Appreciate and show gratitude for everything she does. Put my wife's needs above my own. On the lady's side, be a better listener. Not expect him to serve me, but serve him. Put my husband's needs ahead of my own. I make his lunch every day for work. I'm so tired of it, but I can keep making it for him because it helps him in his day. Making lunches is so annoying. Don't sweat the small stuff. I can focus more on what he does for our family than what he doesn't do. Then I can verbalize my gratefulness. Initiate intimacy. Pray. Stay calm. Keep quiet. Breathe deeply and pray. In that order, we hope. Back to the guy's side. Patience. No griping, period. Get up early and make breakfast. Help around the house. Watch less sports, more Food Network. Delete. Stop requiring things to be logical. Don't shut down and stonewall during an argument. Listen attentively to my wife. Be quick to listen, pray with her more. Not always have to be right. Listen, listen, listen. On the lady's side, pray for my husband. Patience. Stop nagging about things he isn't doing and appreciating what he does do. Honesty, open in communication, appreciation. Make him a priority over kids. Hey, can I just make a comment about that? I listened to a sermon this week, and the guy asked the question, if you're out on a boat, you have two kids in the boat and your wife, the boat's going down, who do you save? From a biblical point of view, you save your wife. The first priority and the highest love you have in this entire universe is for your wife and for your husband. Don't love your kids to death. Love them, but don't make them the highest priority in your life. Your spouse has that priority. We're going to come back to that in a couple weeks. A couple more from the guys. Listen fully to her during conversations. Listen to what she is talking about. Try to talk to her when I'm ready. Focus on my anchor. Don't feel small. Spend more time with her. Give her flowers and love notes. Can I just make a comment about that? You know, quite truthfully, guys, I think a lot of us know the things that would make our wife feel loved. We know what they are. We just don't do them. Wouldn't part of dying to self be, okay, I think it's the stupidest waste of money to buy her flowers ever. But if she likes them, go buy her flowers. My wife loves notes. I hate notes. She wants, if I could get her a card just out of the blue, she'd, you know, have a heart attack and keel over. But would it just be the smallest thing and easiest thing in the world just to write her a note? It's not hard. I know these things. I just don't do them. A couple more from the ladies will be done. Share words of gratitude with my husband out loud. Be quick to listen and slow to speak. Realize better his reality. Hug him more even when I feel grumpy. Kiss him. That's a good one. Ask him how his day was when he comes home. Spend intentional time. Focus on being thankful rather than being critical. Serve him. Not explain the negative aspects of his ideas before agreeing on why they are good. That's so good. That's so good. No nagging, quick to listen. And there's lots of, I skipped over a few of those. So, you know, between the two services, probably close to 200, if not more, texts from people that are trying to think about, okay, how can I do this better? This is the intent of this entire month. It's not just to roll through another month and talk about these things, but really, how can we do this better? And I am convinced that dying to self is at the heart of making any good marriage even better. So this week as you go, think about ways to do this and then really do it. If you're really bold, ask your spouse how you can do it better. I had one lady write, I've started asking my husband to regularly pray over me, like out loud, that I would do a better job of serving him. I like that idea. It's a really good idea. It wasn't my wife that wrote it, though, unfortunately. So think about these things and really work at small little baby step practical ways to die to self better in order to serve her or serve him better. That is the model. And nobody's going to fix it overnight. You're not going to be, you know, way better. You know, tomorrow morning I'm going to... No. Just make some small adjustments, baby step, improve it along the way, and just watch and see what God can do to a good marriage to make it even better.